Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. In the second part of the interview with Peter Shampoo, author of Gaia Matrix, Arcom, and the Geometries of Destiny in the North American Landscape, we continue to identify a few more ley line intersections and also look at the areas that author David Paulides wrote about in his book series Missing 411 that chronicle people who go missing in North America's national parks. Is there a correlation with energy lines, earth rings, sacred land, and missing persons? Peter Shampoo's latest work, titled Ark of Antero, America's Sacred Landscape, brings together a lot of the research from Gaia Matrix to redesignate significant energy points away from a poisoned landscape and into an ideal, energetic harmony. Peter, welcome back to Another News.
Hey, thanks, Jeff. Great to be here.
Can you remind listeners what a ley line is and the difference, as you pointed out, LEY and LEI?
Ley lines and ley lines are LEY is the English form of ley line, and everywhere else is LEI, as in the flower ley. So ley lines are a series of natural and cultural features which align across great distances. The south of England has a very noticeable line with a lot of Stonehenge and such along it. It's called the Michael Mary line, and that's a line with the May 1st sunrise, so a very, very auspicious day for pagans and such, the start of the vegetable year. But ley lines come out of the 90% of life. That's the unknown that's out there. In quantum physics, and we look at the universe, and we can make up for roughly 4 to 10% of the mass is equated to what the gravity field is out there. So there's 90% of the missing from what we see. So between you and I, Jeff, there's 90% more happening than what is actually happening between Greenfield and New York. So and what that's filled with are all these energies, all these dark matter energies, which, is kind of a misnomer. These are kind of etherical light energies that permeate the universe. And ley lines are just like an etheric signature, like wind and water. You can't really see them. You can't really possess them or hold them because they're moving and changing and shifting in form all the time. Ley lines are like that energy, that invisible energy that's all around us, that is kind of permeating our lives, and it's an energy that we interact with, but we don't even know it exists. Some people just as soon not know that it exists because it makes life a lot simpler. But that's ley lines. There's quite a research going on right now. Google Earth has really expanded the whole study, and people are looking at alignments and how various models fit around the Earth, like universal vector geometry, and which is taking all of the platonic solids and making a nested single universal vector geometric that locks in around the Earth. And that one is kind of taken on in popularity, even though the originators of it just used it as a model for visualizing the Earth and learning about the Earth, and people have actually taken it as this is what the ubiquitous Earth grid is about, and all the pyramids are all placed on this particular grid, and indeed many of the pyramids are placed on this grid. So it looks like chicken or the egg, where these ley lines come from is hard to say. Seeing them evolve here in Massachusetts, just over the last 30 years, there was a Buddhist peace pagoda that was placed, and then there was a labyrinth put in with a earth-focused community, and then a retreat center was put in with a bell and another labyrinth, and a Buddhist education center came in, and then a couple put in a stone circle out on the coast of Massachusetts, and the combination of all these like eight sites goes in a dead straight line right across the state of Massachusetts through Worcester and Mount Wachusett. It's so hitting all these geographical and cultural sites all with the same kind of frequency, if you will. this peace frequency, this bell-shaped frequency. This is a ley line, and it's something that didn't exist before in this case, but it's evolved into being. And what's stimulating that east-west flow is Mount Wachusett, which is a huge node and a volcanic structure in New England. So, I mean, this is, you can go on forever with ley lines because they're everywhere and in every scale. And in our own lives, we tend to create ley lines. Relationships that we establish between place and another place tends to have another thing between the two that is also part of our lives. You know, it's just this, you know, as we entrain these memories in the earth, things kind of respond and come up, and it's this visceral biology, and it's like the earth's nervous system or acupuncture meridian system, if you will.
Absolutely. I think that's a great analogy too. I'm glad I asked you to recap ley lines, because I didn't know that we could make our own ley lines. But you said some people are monitoring this level of energy, and you mentioned a fascinating story about someone in Michigan who built a pyramid in their yard. This came up on someone's radar really quick. Can you tell that story?
Yeah. You know, working in this, doing this work I do, I really hear from a lot of people who are doing some, you know, interesting earth energy work, and compile a database of all these various sacred sites and energy forms, ley lines, and earth rings that I've come across. And, you know, there's always this cultural contribution. We are a culture. We are growing. And how we grow and the patterns that we grow in, you know, even in you know, what are the patterns in that mold growth in the laboratory? It says a lot. So, you know, we're looking at Michigan, where this gal and her family were guided to construct a pyramid in their backyard along their in Allegan, Michigan, along Dumont Lake, which is a small lake, motorboats on it and such. And then across the way, across the street, and behind their garage, they built this white pyramid. It's about 20 feet tall, and it's how, you know, inside you can climb in. It was built by a fellow who knew, you know, worked for the government himself, and he knew a thing or two about it. Energy dynamics and how to make things hum, and so he created this pyramid for them, designed and built this pyramid. Within 6 months, it was very soon after building it, the Navy showed up asking questions about it. Well, they showed up in the form of botanical salesmen, Encyclopedia Britannica salesmen, but they parked down the street, so all the neighbors saw, you know, what were the Navy, how come the Navy was visiting? And they were very interested in this pyramid. It just popped up right up on their radar. And of course, you know, Mary Hardy was the creator. She's a new Saqqara out there. She has a yearly gathering in late July, but so I'm looking at that placement of her pyramid, and by coincidence and happenstance, the exact same latitude that the pyramid is on is the same place, the exact same latitude I'm on, my town's icon, which is Poet Seat Tower. That's the exact word. And then if you go due east, it goes to Rennes-le-Château. So there's like this frequency of esoteric stuff on this particular latitude that I found very interesting.
What does that tell us about the unseen energy that's flowing through the landscape around us, that the Navy does this clandestine visit?
Well, I think they use some of the same technologies. They're aware of what the pyramid is. You know, it's an antenna system. It's made to resonate with both the Earth and the Moon as a combined dynamic, a combined matrix, combined electrical, the electrical magneto that the Earth is, that the solar system is. You know, we're spinning through all that, and the pyramids tune into that. The pyramids are at the angle of water, so that the bonding angle of water is 104 degrees. And that's essentially the 104 degrees. It's very close to when you combine the bonding of water.
All right. Just to jump around here, Peter, we had an interesting discussion, and you mentioned the pyramid in Michigan, and I just wanted you to share that with listeners, but you also mentioned a letter that you wrote. When you started to begin your research in this area, Clinton was campaigning, but you wrote him a letter to tell him about your work. This is a case where they probably read your letter. Tell us what happened.
Back in mid-90s, I had a nonprofit called ARKHOM, A-R-K-H-O-M, and we were trying to create a millennium project where we created this giant stone circle out of megaliths on the land, placed in a circle, which was would be Boston, Providence, New Haven, making this giant 120-mile radius ring here in New England that combined all these states into this single new covenant with the land. I used a lot of language. It was a name that was given to me as to what to call this discovery that I made in the landscape of New England, which was this naturally occurring sacred geometry. And it blew my mind finding it, that it existed. It was this thing of, I was looking for sacred geometry in the landscape because I saw it in everything else, from galaxy to human to flower. It must be in the landscape as well. And indeed it was. And so I thought that by honoring this kind of form that we all co-created, spontaneously, and bring it into form and state it as a new covenant with the land, as an affirmation towards the future. And I sent that off to I was just trying to market this project that I was doing, and a friend happened to have Al Gore's fax number. Vice president at the time, so I sent him my little missive about the new covenant with the land, and then on January 23rd, 1996, Bill Clinton gave the State of the Union address at Capitol Hill on the new covenant with the land, and it was that whole concept that I offered was definitely what was the framing of his entire State of the Union address this year. He kept referring, this new covenant with the land. Nobody could figure out what he was talking about. What is this new covenant with the land? He's getting really weird already, We're not, what's he saying? Mm-hmm. So you see where Bill's travels and travels to it. He goes to the Tetons, which is the center of a really big earth ring dynamic with a lot of, it's a center node for a lot of ley lines coming through that neck of the woods. And so he went there and he goes out to the Finger Lakes, another power point. He goes down to Merida, Mexico on the Yucatan, which is another power point. All these are centric points to these biome rings, these earth rings that I've identified. And so it appears as though powers that be already had a map, so I was telling them, hey, look at this map, and they probably already had it because they were, maybe they're following my work, and they never give me credit.
No attribution, no acknowledgement.
That's the Clinton story.
Well, you mentioned earth rings, Peter. Can you describe for us the concept of earth rings once more?
Oh, boy. Yes. Earth rings are a circular ley line where you have natural and cultural features all making a ring, a circle. Dynamic example of this is the Great Lakes. You have, where that pyramid is, the New Saqqara pyramid is there in that Great Lakes biome, and by the pyramid tuning into water, being the geometry of water, it's tuning into the entire Great Lakes. So that pyramid works with the entire kind of spin field of the Great Lakes, that circular thing you see going around through Detroit and Chicago and Duluth. Yeah, that's the ring there, that shape. And you can see the shapes everywhere on the earth. We have these gestures, like the gesture of Japan, the arcs of the Sierra Nevada Mountains, the arc of China, the arc of the coast of China. And, you know, all these various forms that we see are, you know, there's a curve there. But I took time and actually measured them. The one that was first got me going on this was centered on the Grand Tetons. And this great circle of mountains around the Grand Tetons includes Sedona and Mount Whitney and Mount Shasta and Banff Lake Louise. And just amazing, these beautiful places. But all these places are also magnetic anomalies. And it was first discovered by this gal, Dorothy Leone, who was flying with her husband in a mail plane. And the only thing she had to do was look at, you know, while away the hours, look at these maps of aviation maps. And she, you know, noticed that there were these magnetic anomalies registered on these aviation maps. And she started plotting them and found that they were all in a circle, created a circle all around the Great West. Greater West, through Nebraska, you know, even out into the plains, the same sort of magnetic nodes that would throw off the compass of an airline or airplane as you were flying over it. So that's why it's noted. So there was this 1,400 mile wide ring in the land, right? And then I'm seeing, well, this arc of the coast of China, the east coast of China, 1,400-mile, you know, if you were to complete that arc, it's a 1,400-mile arc. Mm-hmm. So looking, well, what's 1,400 miles? And the inner core of the planet is thought to be 1,400 miles in diameter. So it appears that what we have here is a projection, a searing or a burning or an eruption or a bubble or something of the inner core on the surface. But this inner core also is the same size as the planet Pluto, right? There's this communication dimensionally, you know, just by size between Pluto, the most outer planet, and the Earth. So we have this kind of like witness out there that's connecting all these planetary spheres. So I said, well, what about these? What about the other spheres, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and you look inside the Earth, and it's just these nested spheres, the inner and outer core, the upper and lower mantle. They just found that on the upper, between the upper, the boundary zone between the upper and lower mantle is filled with water. So the scientists, you know, this is the latest deal on this, and the geophysicists are now saying that the water did not come from the sky via comets over millennia. It came from the Earth erupting through volcanic action, coming out of the mantle. So, you know, we have these rings. So each one of these rings, like, for instance, that boundary point between those two mantles, you project those onto the surface, and you have the 42nd parallel, which is the most ideal place on the planet to grow crops, you know, and to create empire. So you have this synthesis, this kind of conversation going on between ring and surface, and as well as other planets. So the outer core of the Earth is not the exact same size, but very close, 4,000 mile range as Mars. Oh, and then the outer mantle is the same size as Venus. So we have this Earth that is in shape and in resonance with its neighboring inner planets, and it is in connection with this kind of protoplanet that's waiting out there in the wings, ready to come into the sun and start creating another planet that will, you know, like come in and become another Mercury. Mercury will move out, and it just, you know, this is kind of how I'm seeing the solar system working, as this biology with new input all the time. It's not static; it's dynamic and moving constantly, and interacting and communicating. This is how astrology works. You know, Venus can affect me because Venus is communicating very deeply with my planet. And where that gets projected out, Venus is an Earth ring called the 19.5 degree latitude. And that's one of the world tree branches, if you will. You find Teotihuacan on that. You find a lot of the major volcanic spots on the Earth come out at that latitude, and the same with the Sun, and same with the red spot on Jupiter, where all the sunspots come out are 19.5, and you know this type of thing are replicated throughout. So this pattern, this cross-sectional pattern, has a proportion to it, a gradient proportion of the Earth, right? So you have inner, outer, and the different mantles than the crust, and that all has a geometry of 9. If you take a 9-pointed star and generate the 4 polygons, you create this kind of nested form, and those rings nest right within those geometries. So this enneagram, this 9, this completion of form, is replicated in all form. You see it in galaxies. You see it in proportion of the interior of the sun. You see it in the plane of the orbits around the solar systems. It's like everywhere. It's within the human eye as well. If you ever forget what this pattern looks like, just look in your eye. I mean, so it's by us seeing, we are actually seeing with the universe and seeing with, I mean, it's mind-blowing, you know, just locations of it all and the interconnectedness of it all. So, you know, so I'm finding these Earth rings are a lot of different scales, right down to the invisible Earth energy vortexes that we find out on the land that create twisted tree trunks and create these kind of weird anomalous places of magnetism. They all have that same geometry implicit to it.
Trees do give away some of the invisible energies around a particular landscape.
Right. It's in feng shui, it's a wind and water. You can't tell what the wind is doing while the tree is moving. And that's the same way you detect these energies by seeing what the effect is of its passage.
The reason I wanted you to give a background on Earth rings and your research in this area is just incredible, because some listeners may know of David Paulides, the author of the book series Missing 411, which identified hundreds of cases of people going missing in national parks. Now, he doesn't conclude with any specific reason as to why or who is responsible. Instead, he compiles exhaustive detail to let the patterns emerge. There could be more patterns emerging when you overlay your maps and his cluster maps of missing people. And looking at two locations in British Columbia that were mentioned, Pitt Lake and Harrison Lake, north of Vancouver, areas where seasoned hikers go missing and report back stories of their environment suddenly changing as if stepping into another reality. Now, these two lakes are right in line with the tectonic plate Earth ring that you identify that comes down the Cascade and Sierra Nevada mountain ranges, plus a clockwise ring, the inner core ring, all dotted with clusters of missing people in national parks. There are a couple aspects here I want to look at, but first I want to look at the significance of the Earth rings, and then the significance of the sacred land. But first, the Earth ring.
Yeah, we've lived on this Earth with creating arbitrary rectangles, thinking of Kansas. And we've divided the Earth up in ways which are not organic and not in keeping with the pattern of the Earth. We've just, you know, yes, we've used rivers and certain latitudes to define, you know, consistent latitudes and, you know, using rivers for boundaries. You know, the West, when the West was laid out, the grid was used as, you know, the east-west, north-south grid was used as the primary form out there. So you have all the streets in that shape. And you, by doing that, you're separating yourselves from nature. You're separating yourselves from the dynamic kind of power that's implicit to nature. We talked of how energies get stuck at crossroads. And when you create all these right angles, there's a lot of stuck energy that gets happened. You get these stuck attitudes within these rectangles. Here in New England, it's very easy to feel this. You know, going across the border between Vermont and New Hampshire, I mean, boy, it's huge. Or Massachusetts in either of those states, or Connecticut. I mean, it's just, there's this vibration that permeates that rectangle. Mm. that's completely foreign to the Earth. For instance, created the Missouri Compromise, the 3630 latitude across the land. That's, I call that the slave meridian, because north of that was non-slave, south of that was slave. It's the Virginia and North Carolina border, and goes right across the top of Oklahoma and such, and across the Texas, top of Texas. And the Trail of Tears is also on that same parallel, and the New Madrid Fault is also on that same parallel. So there's kind of like the heart and soul of America was really tore up, and there's a line that runs right across the country, and that is affecting the Earth. So if we can use these patterns that I'm discovering as a way in which to grow organically with the patterns of the Earth, I think that we can better sustain our culture. When you come in and throw in arbitrary forms, it doesn't allow the flow of chi to move. It doesn't allow the flow of the vitality of weather to go through the land. Since we've written the book Gaia Matrix, and many people have cited the Great Lakes Earth Ring within their book, within the context of, you know, Templar's treasures or some kind of anomaly up in the Great Lakes. There's been this kind of consciousness, the collective consciousness that's evolved around the Great Lakes. And since then, there's been this, just this, like, sucking of weather coming in. More and more weather is focused on Sault Ste. Marie, which is the center point of it all. There's just one storm after another all year long has been going through there. I think there's weather modification that can be used with Earth Rings. It can be used as an educational model because it incorporates all the sciences in order to understand it. I see it as a relational model where, you know, the people of the Great Lakes, you know, you can identify yourselves and make decisions, you know, based on a biome, a biological piece of the Earth, rather than having you know, federal policy that or state policy that can undermine you know, the ecology of that particular zone that has a particular biome that has particular needs. So and this map that missing 411, it hits a lot of the Earth Ring places because they come along the edge fields where those lakes you mentioned up in British Columbia are at an intersecting point between an intersecting zone between a ring that's defined by the Vancouver Island and that Vancouver Passage coming down and intersecting the great Mars-sized North American Earth Ring that curves up California. You know, where those intersect would be a dimensional portal. And quite often there's volcanism there or some kind of fault there. And also a magnetic anomaly is also associated with these places. So I think a combination of all these create a portal into the 90% of life, that place where all the Bigfoot and fairies and ghosts and masters, saints, and prophets all hang out.
We're speaking with Peter Champeau, author of Gaia Matrix, Arcom and the Geometries of Destiny in the North American Landscape. We'll be right back after this break. Just joining us, we're speaking with Peter Champeau, author of Gaia Matrix, Arcom and the Geometries of Destiny in the North American Landscape. Well, you had emphasized that the Native American cultures have a certain respect for locations and mountain peaks. People dare not tread on the peaks, just as the sacred land of Sedona, Arizona, and those drawn to the area are called light eaters. Why is it important to give a wide berth to sacred land?
Sacred land, well, the early popes found out quite early that the pagans wouldn't go to church unless you put the church on the old pagan site. They learned that with the Irish. And, okay, you know, if this was a site for the Black Madonna or the Black Virgin they had as this kind of the goddess figure, Isis or whatever, they say, okay, this is now going to be a Mary Magdalene chapel. You know, so everywhere, you know, Isis went, Magdalene was sure to follow. Yeah. So it's like when you control the sacred sites, you control the world. You control the group mind. You control consciousness. By leaving them open, you allow consciousness to interact with space and to allow many kinds of consciousness to interact with these dimensional spaces that the Indians recognized as Manitou, places of heart, places of spirit, places of power, where you know, one could access the 90%. For the purpose of guidance or to find medicine solution, contact the memories. But you need space. The buffalo needs space. And the dimensionals need space. And they play a very important part in the maintenance. The world service, you know, is huge with them. The dimensionals are all about that. Fairies are all about preserving nature, and Bigfoot is out there trying to clean up the mess. And you know, and he's built for moving some big stuff. And so it's a space for all these types of beings to live, and recognizing that they also have a right to be.
Well, in your online book, Ark of Antero, America's Sacred Landscape. It's a fascinating read, and it's really advanced. It took me a while to get through it. You mentioned in your book, Gaia Matrix, that the current dynamic geometry of the United States lends to a poison environment, finite markets, and moral corruption. It does link to the key points within the Gaia Matrix.
Yeah, we can see how we can, Bob, well, these patterns help us identify our dysfunctions. Identify our strengths, identify where we should go, you know, directions of, you know, what kind of geometry we create reflect what kind of people we are. I did get on my soapbox in Gaia Matrix when it came to the DC patterning, because the man-made pattern that is overlaid on top of a natural pattern for the purpose of, well, it's questionable purpose, because in the case of Washington, D.C., which is on one of the major ley lines, the, you know, constructive ley lines of North America and Gaia Matrix and all this, it's is this courtyard of Xochipilli, which is in the back of the Organization of American States. This point that I'm mentioning, this Organization of American States, is the very center point of the Washington, D.C. diamond that was laid out by Elfant and Elfant and, what was his, I can't remember. They had a Moor, a black man, actually laid out the white surveyors at the time couldn't map out such a large diamond, but they found this Moor that could. So he came over from, I think, England. But what was placed there initially was the first plumbed house of Washington, D.C., and that was raised. And then they put in the Organization of American States, and that is a it's like an entity that is separate from the continental United States, or a possession of the U.S., or a possession of D.C. It's owned and as a separate country right in the very heart of our democracy. And right in the back of this building, which is the first UN, if you will, quite mysterious what they do, magical building with all kinds of symbols all throughout its soffits. All the Americas, all the esoteric symbols of the Americas are on this building. In the backyard is this this statue of Xochipilli, who was a Aztec god, and behind him is this giant, like 35-foot tall death mask. Okay, and this is right across the street from the Daughters of the American Revolution on a Memorial Hall. All right, so you have this death mask and Xochipilli, and Xochipilli was the god of sports and the ball court, and because of that, he was the god of youth, because only the youth would be on these ball courts, and because the ball players got all the best women, all the best chocolate, whatever they gave, it was considered the god of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, essentially. You know, Xochipilli is youth. It's he has flowers all over him, psychedelic mushrooms all over him, in his the way he's depicted. That's the tone, if you will. The axis mundi, the center tone of a place, is its center axis, the axis mundi, and that's the axis mundi of the United States of America.
Center of the diamond.
Center of the diamond. Center of the diamond. A god that is called forth whenever you're doing human sacrifice. It's when you're slicing through, there's this whole cosmology in the Aztec human sacrifice thing, is that as you cut through the various layers of skin and sinew and bone and into the flesh, you're placating different gods, and I think he's the muscle layer of things. So you look at the American culture, and the football and the politicians and the autocrats, and it's just like the Aztec culture. the human sacrifice. Wow, we put them down for sacrificing 10,000 in one day on top of this pyramid, and that's what the conquistadors came to when they arrived, was this tremendous slaughter that was taking place.
This was kind of the motivation for identifying another area of harmonic balance within the United States or North American landscape, and this was in the San Luis Valley. Why is this your first choice here?
I've been looking for this for quite a while. Went for the center at first, this Gaia matrix that I came up with and the Arcombe geometry is the center point of the North American Earth Ring. So, if you will, the arc of California, Mexico, that you see there, if you were to resolve that arc, the center point would have been Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, and this whole geometry that I discovered around it, which New York City is pointing towards, which the coast of Maine points towards, and a lot of ley lines point towards, this centric feature of our continent. And indeed, it's the most stable part of in oldest part of our continent. The center point of a hurricane is calm. Nothing happens there. Where the edge field, like out in California, it's this dynamism that's taking place. There's not much happening in sleepy old Shelburne Falls, but on the edge of the Gaia matrix spin field, we find New York City. We find Montreal. We find, it's this kind of high energy. You find Syracuse. It's just this dynamic expression of culture coming out. Cape Cod. So where the Arc of Ontario is in San Luis Valley, southern San Luis Valley of southern Colorado, south central Colorado, it's a vesica shaped form, which is always says portal, which says eyeball, which says look at me, which says God to me, because it's the intersection of spirit and matter, two spheres intersecting or two circles intersecting. It's kind of like the first step of creation, first step of sacred geometry. So where this Arc of Ontario is located is at a confluence of a lot of different earth rings and the various dimension earth rings all intersecting at this one place, along with ley lines. It's this position on the continent is in an alignment between L.A. and New York City. So it connects these two major population centers via an axis that has been entrained and tuned by native people for thousands and tens of thousands of years where their ceremonial work with these sacred mountains in the area of Ontario, Blanca Peak to be exact, Blanca Peak being the home of the Sunrise people, if you will, of the Dene or Navajo people. So there's a lot of convergence of various factors that are important for sacred sites at this San Luis Valley that makes it kind of like a Delphi of America. It's where there's hundreds of Sibyls that have come there to channel, to live there, to say that we should build a pink pyramid here, a 300-foot-tall pink pyramid that will bring down the Arcturians. There's people envisioning New Age cities. I mean, the place just brings up the imagination of the American spirit, and it's bounded by the Sangre de Cristos, the Blood of Christ mountains. Yeah, some conquistador came through there, and look at those red mountains. I think I'll call it after Christ. It's cool, but just that's how just the response to that is that place and naming that those mountains that created a certain vibration and energy that's been entraining this container. It contains the blood of Christ. Ontario is full of these aquamarine crystals. And aquamarine is the exact color spectrum opposite the color of blood. So it has all these this rich mythology of the land. And I guess that's what I'm trying to do is return the myth to the land, and have it be this alive place again, full of mystery and power and fairies and Bigfoots .
The subtitle of this online book is America's Sacred Landscape, and what you addressed is the effects of the electromagnetic pulses from the nuclear weapons testing on the Earth's natural tellurics, and you pointed out the discord that was struck onto the soul of America. Can you talk about this part of your research?
Yeah. I started in on this looking at the 104.5 latitude through the Front Range of Colorado. Northern end of it is the Devil's Tower, and it comes down through Denver International Airport and hits upon all these volcanic outlets that are all down the Front Range, stretching right down to Mexico. And then there's a series of lines, telluric lines, like the Front Range line that goes through some sacred peak. And then there's this another line there that had Los Alamos on it, and as well the White Sands missile. So I started thinking about that Los Alamos and White Sands, just to make that clear, is on the same longitudinal line. So they're on the same magnetic, electromagnetic meridian, same telluric meridian, same consciousness meridian. So we have this breath at night. The tellurics flow north. During the day, the tellurics flow south. So when you explode an atomic bomb on a telluric bandwidth, that fire follows that telluric energy because it's a path of least resistance following what the earth current has already set up. So what that did was it drew a volcanic fire up the Rio Grande Valley towards Los Alamos and up to the western edge of the Arc of Ontario. So there's this kind of like an ability here, to heal some, with this Arc of Ontario, we can heal this this black light that was, placed in our land. And it was placed in such a holy place, the Four Corner area is such a, desolate area, but it's so important and so vital for the you know, how everything works everywhere else. You know, why it rains in Massachusetts. You know, and right in the middle of all that is the Hopi doing their snake dance, which brought the rains. And it was just by their work, their ceremonial dances that were tuned to the land. The tune was a circular tune, a round, if you will, and these rounds all hooked in like this very a mechanical wheel, like a gears of a clock. And when you look at these various ring dynamics, how they spin, you know, like if one spins counterclockwise, it intersects another one. That one spins clockwise, and so on. And so what I found is all these earth rings that I've identified all have a spin that is works together with all the other ones. So when you put a line like this black sun cutting a hole right through that spin dynamic, the four corners spin wheel, the four corners ring, which is centered on ship rock. Right near the four corner point, that is the vehicle that really starts the water turning and brings things moving throughout the continent. So the Hopi doing their ceremony, you know, I mean, you know, forget about weather modification. They need to give all their money to the Hopi to do their ceremony again. You know, it's just, you know, but that's kind of difficult because a lot of the Hopi have become Mormons and don't do the ceremony anymore. Kind of tourist thing.
Oh, interesting. Because of your extensive research of these dynamic energies on the planet and the proliferation of information on the flat earth theory online, there's so much being shared, whether it's accurate or not, about the earth being flat. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm with Galileo. Yeah, flat earth, it's round. It's definitely a round earth. But you can have a flat world view. That's okay to still have. But, see, I've seen it this way since 1970. The Earth is expanding. The universe is expanding. Things grow. Everything grows. The Earth is alive. It's growing. It's expanding. You know, when I was 20, 21 or something like that, I was looking at the globe and seeing, hey, you know, if you shrink all the landforms down, it becomes just this round ball, and all the landforms all nest together like a baseball. And indeed, what has been discovered is that the land that's in the underneath the ocean is all 150 to 200 million years or less old, where all the land on the dry side is all like in the billions of years. We look underneath the oceans and we see the Marianas Trench, and we see these various mountain ranges, and they all look like stretch marks on a woman's belly. You know, and it looks like the Earth is expanding. And indeed, as the Earth expands, I think there's more water that gets squeezed out of it. And, you know, so that's the dynamic I see happening. The hollow Earth, there may be a hollow Earth inside there because of this expansion. But I would think, you know, like any living cell, if it was hollow, it wouldn't be able to expand and live as it does. So it's hollow inside only in the sense that dimensionally you can go down there. There are, you know, ET groups that have the ability to, you know, live in that kind of altered dimension, you know, different than our reality. And yeah, you know, there's a central sun down there for sure. You know, it's 1,400 miles across. As far as I'm concerned, you know, this is it. We're on it, and we're expanding too, and our minds expand. Everything expands. We evolve, we change, we have greater capacity. You know, why not the Earth too? You know, we are made in the image and likeness of God, according to the Bible. And if you say that God is anything but what's around us, then, you know, to me that's blasphemy. And so we're made in the image and likeness of the Earth as well, or is. You know, we are, and, you know, that's the Earth rings. We're the image and likeness, you know, we see the image, we see the likeness through these eyes that are the earth rings. And, you know, that's what I offer the world. And, you know, y'all can keep going to Disney World. You know, there's some real good things. You know, that's America's sacred site. And Cape Canaveral is on America's sacred site. And there's a new sacred site that's just evolved over in Galveston, Texas, called the Blue Pyramid. Now, if you take those three places that I just mentioned and add in the Deep Horizon oil spill, and you'll get a ley line. You'll get a telluric current going, well, not a telluric current, it's an east-west current, so it's one of those bandings. And that's very close. It's a 28-degree of latitude and very close to the 30th-degree latitude, which is the Coriolis effect. It's the whole spin thing. So it's where we get the greatest velocity to shoot rockets out into space through Cape Canaveral. But there's also, you know, it's the greatest place to shoot our dreams out into the outer space, out over, you know, Fantasy Island. And we develop, we hold memories, we create memories there, and memories are held in limestone. Limestone is this thing we find under Jerusalem, under the Yucatan, under the south of England, under many, many holy places have this limestone, and it's, you know, it resonates with our own limestone and our own bodies. And there's a ley line that goes right down through Florida that has these. You can see it on any geologic or satellite map, just going right from where the northern point of Georgia, where it has that jog in its northern border, down to its southern point. You see that ley sitting right there, right, going right through Disney World and all those beautiful waters of central Florida. And so the water and limestone and pyramids, and oh, it's great stuff.
Yeah, Coral Castle. Down
there. Coral Castle. Was that near? Is that over in Orlando in that area as well?
It's down toward Miami.
It's the same as the pyramid. Mm-hmm. Now, the pyramid's all out of limestone.
Yes.
The Giza Plateau is on limestone. It's important. It's where memory is held, I think. Ganglia of the brain are the nine glia cells that assist every neuron. You know, that's how we access the 90% is through our glial body, because that replicates that frequency of the 90%. Our DNA, we have 90% junk DNA. Well, that DNA is long enough to reach from the sun out to the edge of the heliosphere, the 12 billion miles away, you know, in each of our bodies, you know, this DNA, this junk DNA, you know, that's how we access this. You know, it's our attenuating frequency generator for tuning into dark matter, for tuning into that space that we're kind of immersed in, but we are in amnesia. We don't know that it exists, and I guess that's the wonderful thing about we don't need to know it all exists. We can just live our lives and not have to worry about this until I came along and.
And forced us to think about this. But Peter, you've given us a wonderful gift, and it is just remarkable to start to contemplate some of these incredible discoveries that you've made. Peter Shampoo is our guest, author of Gaia Matrix, Arcom, and the Geometries of Destiny in the North American Landscape. We also spoke with Peter about his online book, Arc of Antero, America's Sacred Landscape. Peter, your website is geometryofplace.com, and there listeners can get a hold of you. This is the end of the second hour with you, and I really appreciate you being a guest and doing all this incredible work, and we'll have you back on again because there's so much more to talk about.
Thanks so much, Jeff, and great success to you down in Big City in New York.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Join me again next Monday, 10 p.m.
There's a highway telling me to go where I came from. Such a long way, I don't even know where I am. Such a long way. Sit right to where I am, and it's easier. reckon on my way here, I'm gonna stay here all right. Tomorrow I'm gonna hang my feet in a streamer. Pretending my world is real, yours a dreamer. And the highway, I'm gonna sit around you where I am. It's easier to stay here. Think I know my way here. I'm gonna lay here all right. Taking time now. City life ain't my cup of tea. That's fine. Some take it like goes to the sea. Needing highways, highway. I'm gonna sit around you where I am, and it's easier to stay here. Think I know my way here. I'm gonna lay here, gonna sit here writing a song. Every time one comes along, I'm all right.